Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality, BBS Radio. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're live tonight with Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell from Paranormal Journey, a hit show on Amazon about to go into, I do believe, their second season. We're going to let Gavin tell you a little bit about the show himself, Paula, of course, as well, and how they got started and what they're planning to do in the future. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
And not a problem at all. I'm actually honored to have you guys. I've had a chance to review everything, and I know you're really kicking it off, actually. I've seen you do some interviews with CBS, and I do believe ABC and local stations, and you guys are just rocking it out there, busting your butts. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So tell us what got you started in the paranormal and how you decided to put together a TV show.
I'm going to let Paula tell you.
Okie doke.
As in a personal experience or just as in shot off as in how we got together to start it?
Whatever you're comfortable with. I know a lot of people like to talk about their personal experiences because that's how you actually get started and the interest at least. And then, whatever you're comfortable with, really.
Well, together, a personal experience is my own house. This is how we all got together and started. Had a house fire in 2012. And the house itself, it was built in 1917, so it's an old house. It's part of the original plantation area that I live on. And to make a long story short, we had a house fire in 2012, started remodeling, the burnt section of the house, because it didn't totally destroy the house. It just damaged one section of the house, so we end up, just rebuilding that section and all that stuff. And to make a long story short, we started having some strange things happening in the house. I felt the sensation of a small child in the house. Giving that to the fact, I do have two children, but my children are teenagers. I have a set of twins. At the time, we're 14 years old. And so we started having some strange, peculiar stuff going on. Sounds like a ball dribbling down the hallway, but there was no ball. But you could feel sound like somebody just, bouncing a ball down the hallway. We had a perfume smell, like an old lady's perfume smell. The kind that the woman walked by and you have that strong, felt like you were being invaded by Eldon Bierman's a perfume counter. Where you have the little perfume girls come by and they spray you to death. Felt that, it had that sensation. None of us wear any heavy perfumes in this house.
Yeah, I don't wear perfume.
Hope not. And in just some strange different things. And so I talked to Gavin. Gavin's like, well, maybe, think about maybe getting into doing maybe an investigation in your house. Because everybody thought I was nuts or crazy.
She's nuts.
Anyway, to make a long story short, we ended up doing an investigation on the house. I did a big, huge history research on the house. The house did belong to my parents, and before then, we found out who even built the house and all that stuff. And then we found out about the little boy that had died on the property prior to this house. And old man, the father, too, passed away. And then that ended up being our very first investigation, and everything just kind of set in motion, just started doing little small investigations here and there, and then it just got to the point, we got into something bigger, and then each day got a little bigger, I wouldn't say experimental-wise, but you learn a lot in this field.
Yeah, cool. What basically happened is, after we did the investigation of our house, I compiled it all together and just created a video and put it out on YouTube. And I was contacted by a producer for an independent network in South Haven, Mississippi. And he goes, I like what you guys are doing. And it's just really cool that you guys are not just sitting in a room and just saying, hey, are you here? Can you make a noise? Can you knock? Why'd you die? Things like that. We actually were actually running and gunning. We had our cameras, and we were just basically investigating while filming. We weren't just physically sitting in one designated area, which was a good thing. And he liked it. He goes, I tell you what. He goes, I want to bring you onto my network. And I'm like, okay, so what do I need to do? He goes, just give me some more episodes. I'm like, okay. So for that network, we did 13 episodes. And that show was called The Phantasmic Ghost Hunters. We had a whole different crew, which were exes. Her ex, my ex. And we brought that network over 40,000 plus viewers. And Amazon caught wind of that. And after we were done with that independent network, we went with Amazon. And we started filming for the original series called The Paranormal Journey into the Unknown. And season one is actually going to release October 31st of this year. Season two is going to release February 27th of 2018. And right now we're currently shooting season three. We kick back up with production July of this year. We're going to be filming at the Jailhouse Pizza, which is the old Meade County Jail. And also the famed Monroe House. So we got those two places in July. And we'll be filming season three, which we're hoping to land. Probably that release date will be October 31st, 2018, is what we're shooting for.
You guys are going to have to come up here to Ohio so that way you can film a little bit and I can say hi.
Oh, we will. Well, we are going to be filming at the Ohio State Reformatory in March, I believe.
You are absolutely going to love that place. Just a heads up, there are a lot of challenges with it because there's power in some areas, no power in other areas. And some of the structures can be kind of, though they're sturdy, they can be kind of a pain in the butt, but you're going to love it. I've been to the Ohio Reformatory with many, many investigators, and it's an amazing place. Beautiful, beautiful structure as well. So you'll get some great, great filming. I don't know if you'll get any activity or not, but when does anybody ever know when they're going to get activity?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you have a spirit with a time clock going, I'm going to work today, Bob, click. No. we really don't have to worry about power that much when we do the Ohio State Reformatory because we're going to have a trailer that has our command center. Everything runs out of the trailer, so all we really need to do is just power up the trailer, and then
that's cool.
Everything else will run just fine.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. You guys are going to absolutely love it. I'll buy you dinner when you're up here.
Hey, okay. We're for that.
Let's talk a little bit about your equipment. I know you've gotten some great sponsors within the past year and a half, and you work with some very unique equipment that a lot of people, unless they've been in the field for a long time, aren't aware of, and I think that's amazing. I know you just got some recent sponsors from several people as well, and I know it takes a lot of work to go out there and get sponsors and do equipment and do the pitches and so forth. So let's talk a little bit about that equipment and how you apply it and what you do when you're out there.
Well, the one program that we're currently using is Paula's favorite, and it's called Alice. It's a program that's been developed, and it comes out of the UK. And this program has totally blown my mind. I mean, I am just totally flabbergasted on it because it is like 95 to 98% accurate. And it's similar to the Ovilus, but the Ovilus has a built-in dictionary that you can actually add words to yourself, and it also has pre-programmed words as well. Alice, it's a program that runs on a laptop or a Windows Surface tablet. There is no dictionary. I have no idea how this program actually works, but it can actually pop up sentences, which is really cool because we did a session at the Jefferson Davis's house in Biloxi, Mississippi, and we were in the library, and we were asking a bunch of questions, and by the time we were done, I went ahead and said, well, we thank you for your answers, and all of a sudden it popped up on the screen. You are welcome. You won't see something like that on the Ovilus. You'll probably see one word at a time. This was all in a line. You are welcome. Now, before that, when we started doing the investigation of the house, we were sitting at our booth. Two booths down from us is Jason from TexPart Paranormal. And he had the portal, which is really cool. I like that. I'd like to build one of those myself, but I haven't had time to do it. But he had the portal, and we had Alice running. They were both talking, which was really crazy. But on our screen, we got something that said bird. It said infestation, insect. What else did it say?
I don't remember.
But anyway, we couldn't figure out what the heck it was talking. I'm like, what are you talking about? So we opened up the curtain behind our booth. There was a parrot with an infestation of roaches. And this thing pinpointed that and told us. Then it started rattling off different names and locations. It got the best of Paula. She went to go check in the library. What was
historian up there in the library.
Yeah. And the curator of the librarian actually validated everything that Alice said that was deemed to that location.
To my understanding, now, of course, obviously, I'm very limited on investigations. As you know, I've spoke to you several times on that over Facebook, and I'm very honest about it. I follow investigators. I've been on investigations with investigators. I love to learn about it. That's, you know, all a part of the process, and then discuss the reality of the paranormal and how hard everybody like you and Paula work at it, because it's a very hard job to do. It's really kind of neat when somebody can get that much evidence, because a lot of times you guys go out there and you're lucky if you get a handful of things or anything at all. So that's exactly. That's an interesting story. Let's talk about your roles in the show, so that way when the show does come out and people start joining on Amazon and watching, they'll know exactly what you do, exactly what Paula does, how you guys work together, if you have any other team members that work with you, and so forth.
All right. Well, on the show, I am the host and the lead investigator, and Paula is a researcher, historian, and photographer. We also have two camera crew that follows us. I have a camera that usually follows me. She has a camera that follows her. Sometimes we have a designated base camp watcher. But lately, we've been working with other investigators. We're bringing them into our show. And we're bringing them in because they're passionate about the paranormal. They're not the ones that are like seeking the limelight or want to be on TV. They know that we have a show and they're like, ooh, easy way in. No, the ones that we have chosen to work with us are not like that. And you know one of them, Mr. Joe Vitale, which is now our video editor for the TV show. He does a phenomenal job on it. I commend him. He works really hard. And oh, boy, if we actually were in the same house, I think there would be stuff getting thrown around every now and then, because between him and I, we are both 100% analytical. And if we get a piece of evidence and we look at it, for instance, we had a video that shows a shadow that appears in the doorway and disappears. So he's looking at it. I'm looking at it. He's like, well, I don't know. It could be. It couldn't be. But let's kind of dig into this a little bit. So he starts playing with different filters. I'm playing with different filters. And just to make a long story short, after about an hour and a half of deliberating and just tearing this footage apart, it was Paula. She was walking on down the hallway in pitch darkness, dragging the DVR cable, went into the entryway, and then went around the other side so she could go ahead and connect the DVR camera. That's exactly what she was doing, and we actually captured her, but at first it looked like it was a shadow figure.
You know, that's a good thing, though, to mention, actually, because it happens a lot on investigations. And it also shows that both you, the show, Paula, and everybody are working together to try to get something that's substantial. You're not just going out for popularity and saying, like a lot of other people do, hey, look at my TV show.
Right.
So, exactly. You know, I appreciate that, actually, guys. I'd like to thank you personally for it ahead of time. I mean, that's what the paranormal is all about. The paranormal itself is all about that drive, that strive, that want to find out what's out there, how to answer questions, and so forth. And a lot of people throughout the years, I think, have kind of forgotten about that. They just want to be into the fame. They want to have the YouTube channels. They want to have the this and the that. And those are all great. Don't get me wrong. I'm never going to down anybody that does any type of television show because, as you guys know from doing one yourself, it's a lot of hard work. But you know, it's always good to see two people like yourself and your team and Joe and the several other people that are out there that still carry the passion and apply that to the show. So that's really cool. I know that you're promoting right now a lot of other investigators too, with t-shirts and so forth as you're doing your investigations. So any other investigators that are listening tonight, if you're interested in that, you can contact Gavin or Kelly over Facebook or on their website, which is on Paranormal Truth and Reality, and we'll let them talk about here before the end of the show so that you can find them. And you might get lucky. They might have a shirt with your investigation team on the show. Paula, being the researcher, I'm going to ask you a question because I spent a lot of time doing interviews for investigation teams, a lot of time doing research myself, and I kind of just had to learn how to do it. what type of things do you do when you go out and research the area, the property, the people, and so forth? Do you start it before you get to the location, or do you wait until the evidence comes in and then try to match things afterwards?
I do a little both. I do like a preliminary research so I can know what I'm getting into. Number one, I always try to find out, okay, there's stories about a location. I take the stories by like a grain of salt. And I want to know why those stories were said about this location. And I get a little bit of truth. I mean, I don't come in there with 100% everything. And, you know, when you go into a location, you might think you're going to get one set of answers and a whole set of new answers are given to you in the investigation. So you go back and you take the material that you've gotten and you widespread on it and get a lot of after effect in, you know, historical investigations. But as far as I always find out how old the building is, what am I dealing with? What time periods is this building might have existed in? It was in, is it in the 50s? Was it in the roaring 40s? You know, and then you got to think about the time period when this person might have lived there. Like if there was a woman who committed suicide at this location in the 1940s. Okay, you got to put your mind and your headset into, okay, 1940s. And we're not talking about the glamorous 1940s. This is a location where money was a rarity. Depression just got done with. Bootlegging, prohibition. You're having to deal with thinking about what the laws are at right at this very moment. And then you've got to go with the story that was told. And you've got to put yourself into the conflict of, you know, okay, you're coming in here. Supposedly this lady has committed suicide. She's the one that haunts it. You got to think of what her mind might have been at that time period. And you not only do that, you also got to think about who associated with her. Did she have family members living here with her? Because the deal is, even though she might haunt the location, you can associate her with something else. And I always think outside the box when I do research. I not only do research on the house, I do research on the property. I do research of every single person that has ever lived there. Because I can go into phone books from the 1950s and 60s, and I will look up every single person that has ever lived there. Every census, every tax statement, every, a church log. I mean, everything. I don't sit home and watch TV every day like the average American does. My homework is, and my afternoon study is like, okay, what am I getting digging into tonight? And the deal is, there is a couple of locations that don't like me because they have said one thing and I found out the truth. And because of that, certain people just doesn't, you know, I'm sorry, don't lie to me. Don't tell me this, and this has happened, and you expect, you know, going in there and you know, and I'm like, seriously? And when I find out the true information, they're like, well, you can't say that, blah, 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 we might end up. I said, no, the deal is you have something going on here. And I don't say a place is not haunted or haunted. I'm saying that your haunted stories or your paranormal situations at this location is not being used correctly. You're going by a hearsay story and you're just building off of it. If you actually find a little bit of truth, then your ghost stories or your paranormal evidence or your
Are we still here, guys?
Yes, I am. I'm trying to figure out what he's doing.
No, that is a very valid point to bring up, actually. When I did a lot of research in history and locations, you would find some, and some of them, I won't mention any names, obviously, but you guys probably know some of those because you've already been to them or you're planning on being to them and have already done your research. Some of these are fairly famous places, but the stories that they give, they're building off of the fame from those stories and just continuing down the route. And like you said, it's not necessarily the case. It's not every location. Some locations, they just simply don't have all the information, or a few of them have it accurate. But some of them do just kind of wander along with that story because that's the story that's hit television. That's the story that's made them popular and so forth. And they don't really cover the actual truth of what's going on. And like you said, even though they have activity, that activity may not even be related to the truth of that story.
Yeah, that's just like Myrtle's Plantation. They're capitalizing on a Chloe, and Chloe doesn't even exist. We've done research on that and found out there is no birth certificate. There is no death certificate. So Chloe does not exist. And the other thing is, Mr. Winters did not die on the 17th step inside the house. He was shot and killed right then and there on the porch. Because you know how they say that he dragged his body through the parlor and up stairs?
No. Dragged his lifeless body.
Oh, yeah. He dragged his lifeless body. That one cracks me up. How on earth can you drag a lifeless body? But here's the thing. Blood. We all know about this. If you bled that much, that blood is going to seep into the floor, into the wood. It doesn't matter how many layers of carpet you put on there or how many times you change that carpet, that blood's going to show up through the floor.
Uh-huh. Yep, you're still going to have trace matter from the blood no matter what.
Exactly. There's nothing there. Nothing at all.
Yeah, that's one of the locations that don't like me.
Yeah, we've tore up a lot of locations and they just don't like her because the history and the research that she does basically proves that they are making stories up so they can basically capitalize on that location.
That happens quite a lot throughout the paranormal field now that the paranormal has become popular. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing to bring up. Many, many locations, yeah, they sound great and they look great and they have wonderful histories when you see them on TV, but the reality is a lot of those stories are kind of way off base when you start going in. Mm-hmm. And it's all because of the conglomeration of making the money off of it. Hey, look, this is a popular place. We can charge a little bit more. We can get popular. We can do all of this and people will come to us. And I get all of that being in marketing. That's all a part of the marketing game. But I kind of get annoyed at it when it comes to the paranormal, because the paranormal should be more about the research, the findings, answering those questions and getting down to the bottom line of hopefully somewhere along the line trying to find out what these things are.
Right. And one thing I always talk about is, it just happens to be a story that just basically gets dragged along through generation after generation. And the way I can actually explain this in layman's terms is I have a house in the 1800s. There's a tree in the backyard. So just a boring house, boring tree. You know, I want to do something. I want to make money. What can I do? Oh, yeah. Someone got hung on that tree back there. He died. You know, a couple years later, someone got buried in the backyard. A couple years later, someone was murdered on the porch. After you get to our time, You probably got about 17 people hung on the tree, 12 people buried in the backyard, 6 suicides, 4 murders. Someone got shot inside the house. 2 people got dragged off the porch. I mean, it just, you can just build all this up throughout decades. Next thing you know, this becomes the world's biggest haunted house, even though nothing really happened.
You got to love urban legends. I think every town and every area has one. Of course, the more famous ones end up being legends and haunted houses and so forth. But even here in the small town of Morrow County that I was growing up on, we have one of those trees. We have the hanging tree. Nobody ever got hung there. Yeah. It's been a story that's been passed down for God knows how many years. It started with a cowboy that stole cattle, and then they hung him, and then several other people hung themselves, and now, you know, you're not supposed to be there in the middle of the night because you'll get all depressed, and you may wake up in the morning hanging on a tree. No joke, they say waking up in the morning hanging on a tree. Well, again, it's kind of like what you just said earlier. How do you wake up if you're hanging there?
Exactly. Yeah, how are you going to wake up if you're hanging in a tree? Yeah, it'll be something to ponder.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your locations, where to expect to see you when you bring out season 1 on Amazon, and some of the more scary challenges without giving away too much, obviously, because you want them to watch the shows. But let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, most of the places that we've been to in season 1, I'm probably need Paula to help me out with this because we've been to so many, I don't remember them all off the top of my head, but I do know our number one episode is going to be from the St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia.
My favorite place.
Yeah, that one's going to kick off our first season. Then we got Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, which is becoming our stomping grounds. U.S. Marine Hospital.
The Tillman House.
The Tillman House here in Paducah, Kentucky, which is also a Civil War museum. She's looking at me like she don't remember either. The USS Lexington in Corpus Christi, Texas. The Malvern Manor in Malvern, Iowa, which is your favorite. I can't believe you forgot it.
Not really, but yeah.
let's see. I've got one on the top of my... Oh, the Franklin, the old Franklin Jail in Benton, Illinois.
The Columbus Belmont.
Dead Columbus, Belmont, Battlefield. But of course, the ones that we got coming up are going to be the Hinsdale House in New York, the Monroe House in Hartford, Indiana, the Franklin County, not Franklin, the Hartford County Jail in Hartford, Indiana, the Randolph County Asylum, what?
Jailhouse Pizza.
Boy. It's got so many of them, it's hard to even remember.
Well, we have Edinburgh Manor on the list for next year.
Yeah, Edinburgh Manor's on the list for next year. Next year, we're actually... Well, that's the first one. Otherwise, all the ones we're going to be doing next year are going to be strictly jails and prisons. I mean, we've got the Missouri State Pen. We've got Ohio State Reformatory. We've got Licking County Jail. Just a bunch of other ones. Oh, the one in South Carolina, which is the old Charleston Jail. So basically season 4 is primarily going to be about prisons and jails, which is going to be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. You get a chance to specialize a little bit in it, and there are so many of them that have history and stories to them that but it can be pretty amazing. That's one of the things I love about the paranormal. I was speaking to Peter that does a show in Canada, and he talks about the history of Canada. There are so many things that you can get into just in the history alone that you could pretty much do a documentary on that before you even got into the ghosts and hauntings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most definitely.
But are you planning on doing a lot of asylums, or are you going to stay away from those?
Whatever gets thrown in our boat. Because
whatever
so
gets
many...
thrown in our boat?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard that saying before.
Well, I'm just saying, because the fact is we have so many people contacting us all the time, and we can go in so many different directions with this.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we're actually going to start hitting places where no paranormal investigator, no ghost hunter has stepped foot in it. We will be the first. We could actually bring out the history of that location And if there's a story to be told, we're the ones to tell it.
That'll be interesting. Kind of a new look at everything as opposed to the standards that you're seeing a lot on, well, television shows. I mean, it's great to watch some of those ghost hunters that are out there and that have made, you know, fame out of it, but they seem to cover the same locations repetitively. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, they're fascinating locations. It's always good to see them again. I go up to the Ohio Reformatory once a year just to do the tours on Halloween or whenever they do an event, and even pay for the tickets because I love the place. But nevertheless, once you've seen it 1,200 times, it's kind of second nature, so you tend to just kind of sit there and it blanks out if you ever watch the TV show.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take her to Waverly next year because she's never been there. I've already been there. It's just, I mean, to me personally, it's too hyped up. And really, I really didn't get much there when I was there investigating it. But I want to take her up there so she can actually experience the place herself because she is a sensitive. So if there is something there that... has emotions, or if there is a tragedy or something like that, she should be able to sense it.
Waverly is a little overrated. You're not the only investigator I've spoken to, and I had the chance to go with a team to Waverly, and we didn't get anything either. So a handful of what could have been EVPs, but as you guys I'm sure know when you're going through audio, there's a lot of things that can be questionable when you're in an environment like that.
Oh, yeah.
So none of those really were solid on, oh, my God, look at what we got.
Yeah.
So, it's an interesting place to go to, but you're not the only person I've heard that says they really didn't get much when they were there.
Yeah, and a lot of investigators that I have spoken to over the years always talk about the body shooting. They're like, yeah, I got this awesome, it sounds like footsteps. It sounds like someone's scratching or I hear a whisper. And I always shut them down. And they're like, well, why? I'm like, okay. At the end of the body shoot, there is a door. That door is open. Now, this day and age, there is no door. The door is gone. It's just a piece of plastic up there, like saran wrap or something. But when we went, there is a door that's open. So whatever wildlife is outside of the body shoot, that noise or sound is going to resonate throughout the entire body shoot. So it's going to sound like footsteps. It's going to sound like scratching or a whisper. It could be a bird flapping its wings. When you hear it, it's going to sound like something like that, you know? So uh-huh. I tell them, that's the wildlife outside of the body chute. You're not getting anything in the body chute. If that thing was a complete sealed wall, then maybe you got something, but it's wide open. It's a door. They have to take the bodies out through a door. How are they going to, I mean, if it's a wall, where are they going to take the bodies? Just pile them up against the wall? they take it all the way down there to get picked up and taken to wherever, the morgue or a burial or whatever. The ambulance is always out there to pick them up.
And that happens a lot in the older buildings. As a heads up, you're going to get a little bit of that in the Ohio State Reformatory, too. Some of the hallways and the older cells and so forth have a lot of echoes and so, and they have been known to have small pieces of the building decay and fall and creak and so forth. So when you're in there, I've seen a lot of people go in there and go, oh my God, I got something. And you just got to kind of laugh about it going, you really didn't get anything there, guys. You know, you just got the creaking of the building or the fact that you were walking up the steps at the time and it's old steps.
yeah, exactly. Or see, this is what I'm trying to figure out is when we're in an old jail or prison, are we actually 100% hearing cell doors slam?
You know, honestly, I would tell you no. Because as you know, a lot of these structures are very, very old. They're decayed, but they're made of metal. They're made of steel and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it is very easy for a noise, and it can be a small noise. It can be as small as a rock or a pebble or something out of your pocket hitting the right piece of metal at the right time, and that's going to echo through the whole chamber. And I know we did a test one time when we were up there. We took a quarter, and we dropped a quarter, and believe it or not, from down below, that sounded like a cell being closed because of the way it echoed.
Right.
So So if you do a few tests like that, don't be surprised if you don't find something that sounds really similar to hearing it close.
Yeah, I was always wondering about that because I was just like, you know, are they really hearing what sounds like cell doors? I mean, I've seen that in all the Ghost Hunter TV shows, like Ghost Asylum and Ghost Adventures. They're like, oh my God, I heard a cell door. Well, we're actually going to experience this ourselves at Joe House Pizza because the story is up on the second floor. You do hear the cell door slam, but you don't capture anything on video. But we're going to go ahead and take our Tascams up there, which is our sponsor. And the reason why we use their devices is because it can record from levels of 20 kilohertz all the way up to 192. So it can grab a spectrum of sound that we can't hear with the human ear. So if it can actually capture the sound of a cell door, then possibly it is a cell door. And I do know that these recorders do really work because we were at Old South Pittsburgh Hospital and Paula placed the DR100 Mark III, which is their newest recorder out on the market, at the nurse's station. Left it there to record. We went to, where did we go? We went up to the OR room, didn't we, third floor? Or something
I think
like that?
So.
We went up to the third floor to do some more investigating to let that recorder record. Upon evaluating the recordings on there, we actually captured the sound of the elevator doors opening and closing.
Huh.
And there is a camera facing the elevator to show that the elevator did not open and close because we're actually filming the entire nurse's station. So the elevator's right there in the background. So you would have seen it open or close.
That's really kind of cool, though. What do you guys think that is? I mean, do you think that's actually a part of a residual effect?
Yeah, I think it's a residual effect because it happened.
It happened at the nurse time change.
Yeah, shift change is when it happened.
Huh.
And the deal is, the owners I had talked to, we had talked to her after
Stacy.
Yeah, Stacy. We had talked to her after the investigation and told her what we had captured, and she says we're not the first one that has told us that they have captured the
Elevator door.
And she says that it happens at certain times. And she says that's about the time shift change happened at the nurse's station. And she said that the shift changes at least 3 times a day. And they said the activity gets really extreme at certain times of the day, close to what shift change would have been at the hospital.
Yeah. And one of the things that was really bizarre and weird is we stuck a Periscope 360 in the entranceway that would take you toward the nurse's station. And we were in the, I guess it was the waiting room?
We were in ICU
is where we were. So all of a sudden the Periscope started lighting up. It went from green and it made its way all the way to red. And we're sitting on the couch watching this and filming it. Then Brandon, which is our other guest investigator, we had him along with us, along with Joe. So you got Joe on the other side of me, and you got Brandon on the other side of Paula, and we're all just sitting right there. And Brandon starts playing the EKG sound on his phone. And all of a sudden, when it gets down to the nitty-gritty where you get to a flat line, and then he goes, we got a code blue, we got a code blue. All of a sudden, we heard this loud boom, 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 boom on the door. And Brandon gets up. This is hilarious. He gets up, walks over to the door, and kicks it open, thinking that there was a squatter or something. And Joe goes, all right, that person that banged on the door, can you go ahead and do that again? Because that was awesome. And after he said that, sure enough, we heard the boom, 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 boom. It kind of reminded me of a nurse running frantically to a room, pounding on a door to say they're coming in, or maybe the door is locked and they're trying to get in, what it sounded like to me. And we've got this recording, even on the recorder outside the heavy duty door on the nurse's station, you can still hear the banging on the door. All of our cameras got it too, and digital recorders. But that I'm not really sure if it's residual or it just coincided with the sound that the audio trigger object that Brandon was using. So it's really hard to tell on that, but it was awesome when it happened.
That sounds really cool. Do you have particular locations you feel get more activity than others since you've been out there so much? I know from the experiences I've talked to with most everybody else and then being out there tagging along, this activity can show up virtually anywhere. But have you had particular locations that have more activity to them than others?
Yes, I believe so.
To dwell on them? Malvern Manor.
Oh, Lord.
Jeez, how do I know this and you forget?
No, I try to forget that one. Malvern Manor and me have personal issues.
I take it the manor itself had some pretty aggressive activity while you were out there.
It don't like female investigators.
She got scratched.
I got scratched, and a lot of strange behavior activity happened there, and a lot of there's a lot of unexplained situations there that I'm still. I put it this way: I have never been to a location to where I feared my own shadow.
Yeah. The reason
because
why she said that.
Because that place is it's just out there. I mean, I put it this way. You want to go to your own Waverly experience. I've never been to Waverly, like Gavin said earlier. But if you ever want to go to your own Waverly experience and have the most strangest things happen to you, go to Malvern. That is, I have been to a lot of locations. I have been all over the half of this United States. Malvern Manor in Malvern, Iowa is its own story. I'm still trying to figure some of the history out of that own story. And I'm going to tell you up front, it's different. It's a very different experience I've ever had experience with when I walked into that building in that location. I mean, it blew me back, and it was just like you walk into the most heaviest situation to where I've never personally, it's sadness. It was just sadness, hostility, fear. There was hatred. There was so much heavy emotions in that building when I walked into it. I had to keep walking myself out towards the kitchen because, the building just played on my emotions and I just couldn't handle some of it. I would not go upstairs by myself because I told Gavin, I don't know how I feel.
The attic.
The attic just, I can handle a lot of stuff myself, but that place, Hank's room, now me and Hank has a little issue. Hank's the one that scratched me because I was in there when we did the investigation. I had felt burning sensation going all the way down my back. And I went down there, and it's the first time I ever had. Gavin's always been the one that got scratched, got kicked, got anywhere we went to. It always happened to me. Him, it never happened to me. Malvern Manor, basically, I was told Hank does not like female investigators, and he proved it. He did not like me. He didn't like me to talk at him. He did not like me to be in his room. And he politely made it sure that, he did.
Well, it is a very unique experience and scary the first time it happens, definitely, when you end up scratched at any location. Because when nothing's around you and you feel those marks showing up and that burning, and it's really hard to explain. I'm sure you guys know because you've been through it, but you feel that sensation and you know that there's nothing there because I've had it happen to me. I've been scratched on the chest. I've been scratched on the forearm and on the back myself at three different locations. But the first time it happened, I can't say I wasn't startled and afraid at the same time. In fact, I left. I went outside because it was just way too much. It was too overwhelming. But it is definitely a experience that is not fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. But it was just hilarious at the time because she's sitting there talking to Hank. I'm filming her, and she goes, "Oh my God, I have a burning sensation on my back. I said, woohoo, you got scratched. And I actually said that too. And I know she was like, I'm not really feeling the enthusiasm that you're giving. So sure enough, pulled up her shirt and looked, and the scratch was below her bra strap. So there's no way her bra did it. And there's no way she can get to it with her own hands.
That's an interesting story, guys. It proves that though most of the time when you're going out there doing investigations, you come up with logical explanations. And as long as you watch the surroundings, it's fairly safe to do. You always have that risk. And I encourage telling people that all the time. You always have that risk of running into something where you're going to get scratched, something a little bit more dangerous, a little bit more heavy activity, and so forth. Mm-hmm. To date, let me ask you this, to date, have you guys ever had anything tossed, thrown at you, or anything along those lines like a lot of people? Now, I have, but it was only one time. But a lot of people make it out like that happens all the time.
No, we haven't had anything like that.
Now, we did have you to where you were uninvited into a location.
Well, yeah. I got pushed out of a room. That was kind of cool. I'm sure Joe talked about that. When we were at Old South Pittsburgh, he was walking toward the x-ray room, and all of a sudden he just stopped dead in his tracks. And he's like, dude, I can't go any further. I go, why? And he goes, because it feels like I just walked into a brick wall. So I'm being Mr. Badass and all. I was like, get out of the way. So I walk on in there, and I put the recorder down on the x-ray table. And I turned to walk out, and I felt two pair of hands on my back just shove me clean out the door. Huh. That was awesome. That was awesome. I was like, ooh, cool. My camera guy goes, did you just get pushed out of the room? I said, well, I didn't trip on anything because there's nothing there to trip on.
Well, and for the listeners, guys, Joe's a hefty guy. And the Joe that I know from the past 2 years of talking to him, he doesn't just stop in most situations because he's a skeptic in heart. He's very bold with what he does. So for him to stand there and say he can't go any further, that's an event in itself.
Oh, yeah. 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 And I just walked like right past him thinking I was Mr. Yeah. And I get thrown out of the room. But the other one she's talking about is
Bethlehem Academy.
She was talking on the Echovox. And see, what the Bethlehem Academy is, it used to be
an all-girls school. It was a part of the Cat Little Sisters of the Poor community. It was basically you sent your child there. It was a boarding school / church. And you pretty well got paid for private education.
Notice how my voice changed? It was awesome.
Well, I want to make sure you told it correctly.
Oh, I never thought that story. You tell it. That's your story. Because you like saying, he got kicked out.
He did get kicked out.
Well, I know that we're winding down to the last 5 minutes of the show. So let's talk a little bit about where they can find you. We'll again go over when the show airs, the name of the show, and the other season so that everybody knows where to find it. And that way we can follow you a little bit, not only on Facebook, but on your website and so forth.
Okay. Well, you can find us at www.phantasmicghosthunter.com, and that's Phantasmic with a P as in Phil, not F. We do have a lot of events that are coming up. You can come and see us August 4th through the 6th. We're going to be at the Gettysburg Battlefield Bash in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I'm actually going to be performing there because I'm coming back out from singing. I haven't performed in a long time, and I'm actually coming out of a hiatus, so I'll be performing there. We'll also be doing a Tascam roundtable. We'll have a booth there. September 8th and 9th. We're going to be in Mattoon, Illinois at the Silcon Convention, September 23rd, 24th. We're going to be at Biloxi, Mississippi at the Gulf Coast Paracon, and also the investigation of Jefferson Davis's house at the end of the event. October 21st, we're going to be doing a meet and greet from 2 to 3 p.m. in Ashburn, Georgia at the Crime and Punishment Museum. October 26th, we're going to be doing a Ghostology 101 at the McCracken County Public Library, or the Paducah Public Library for folks that are here in Paducah, Kentucky. October 27th through the 29th, we're going to be at the Haunted Bourbon in New Orleans, Louisiana. And there, people that actually are going to be ticket holders that have been referred to them, you know, by either myself or Paula, we're going to take their names down and put them onto a list. Ticket holders will be receiving an autographed picture signed by us, as well as VIP seating to the private screening of The Paranormal Journey into the Unknown, Episode 1 of Season 1, which is going to be really cool. That's everything in a nutshell.
Well, it's actually pretty, like you said, it is pretty cool. So, I'm sure you probably enjoy being up there anyway. Louisiana in itself has a wondrous haunted history. Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful place to visit. A lot of amazing people. It's just, I can't talk enough about it. I've been up there 3 or 4 times throughout my history. In fact, one time I spent about 7 months up there and debated on whether to stay up there or not, but I had to come back to the real world. But yeah, I did a lot of traveling early on, but that's a whole other story. The show is not about me. It's about you guys. So make sure everybody pay attention to Paranormal Journey into the Unknown. It's going to be on Amazon. I'm going to let you guys talk about the times again. When are the release dates?
October 31st.
Yep. October 31st. And by all means, watch it. Gavin and Paula are both delightful people. And Gavin is always helpful. You can ask him a question if you're friends with him on Facebook or if you're in any of the Facebook groups and you see him there. He tends to like to educate people and tell you a little bit about, hey, the do's and the don'ts, along with Joe Vitale, which he's mentioned earlier. Paula, I don't know much about how to find you because I just friended you on Facebook, but everybody can find her obviously on Facebook and on the website as well, so make sure that you do that. In closing, you are speaking to Paranormal Truth and Reality on BBS Radio. This is Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell, Paranormal Journey into the Unknown. Guys, do you have anything else here in the last 3 or 4 minutes that you want to add or talk about?
Oh, yeah. One thing that's kind of cool, we have a production company, and we are actually producing and filming our first movie, and it's called Lucy, and basically the story has to do with the St. Albans Sanatorium, and we have a Hollywood producer that's actually going to be marketing this movie to get it into the theaters probably by the fall of 2019, but we've already got our cast picked out. We're going to probably be looking for extras later on. So if you guys are in the Paducah area or Illinois area and you want to be an extra in a movie, just shoot me a message on Facebook and we can go ahead and set up a time to meet up with you and let you know where to come out to be an extra. Because I know we're going to need a bunch of extras for a church scene. And
oh, there'll be a wedding scene.
Oh, yeah, wedding scene, funeral scene, a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. So. But we're actually proud to be a part of this. And believe it or not, we were actually the paranormal group in this movie. And we've already shot all that stuff while we were at St. Albans. And I actually landed a role in this movie, too. So why not?
Well, it's a hard thing to do. I mean, you got to put the script together. You got to pitch the script. You got to get the producers. You got to get the backing and so forth. So you should be proud of that. I mean, that takes a lot of work. I've seen a lot of people fail at it because they didn't know what they were doing. So,
yeah, Paula is a screenwriter of the movie.
And that's an amazing task in itself, Paula. Anybody that can screenwrite, I know it's tough enough writing books. If you can screenwrite because there's a specific method in doing that, then it takes a lot of effort. I've read some screenplays before. I've never wrote one myself because they look to be simple when you talk about them. But then when you start to look into the complications of how to do it, it can't be easy.
Nope. Well, I'm not doing the screenplay solo. My ideas in the storyline, I am getting a little coaching because this is my first time I ever had written one. And I'm like, okay. So I do have a little coaching in the background. I have some couple other people that had experience with it. So I'm not completely 100% solo on the screenwriting. I'm just taking the historical facts, and I do have a little coaching with it on how it had to be put on paper.
Yeah, and I'm working with the director and the camera crew. That's what I'll be doing.
Well, we'll definitely be watching it when it comes out, and feel free when it does come out to come back on the show and talk about it a little bit. You guys are always welcome. You've been delightful guests. In closing, this is Paranormal Truth and Reality, BBS Radio. I'm Christopher Houston, your host. We've been speaking to Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell, Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown. We're about to let you go, but remember in closing, when you're discussing it, when you're looking at it, when you're thinking about it, in the paranormal, truth should always be the reality. We'll talk to you next week. It's been a great time. And thanks for coming on, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.